Once upon a time, in a faraway swamp, there lived an ogre named Shrek, who isolated himself from the world because he believed he was unlovable. And then one day, Shrek's precious solitude was shattered by an invasion of annoying fairy tale characters, all of whom had been banished from their kingdom by the evil Lord Farquaad. In order to save his swamp, Shrek made a deal with Farquaad and set out to rescue Princess Fiona to be Farquaad's bride. Since the release of the first movie in April 2001, Shrek has become a beloved character with multiple movies and TV series. Have any of you actually seen the Christmas TV special, Shrek the Halls? There are many reasons why many of us relate to Shrek. The lovable outcast who finds his true love in the place he least expects it. Many of us understand what it means to be an outcast, someone whom others avoid. Whether we've seen someone else rejected at school or work or on a sports team or even at church, or whether we are the one who is rejected, we all recognize that being an outcast is a painful and difficult journey. Today's story about Jesus encountering the Samaritan woman at the well is also the story of someone who is a social outcast, whom others avoid. And yet this encounter between the Samaritan woman and Jesus teaches us some powerful lessons about acceptance, about faith, and about witness. As we strive to learn and grow as a church, and especially as we find ways to welcome newcomers, we need to live by the example Jesus and the Samaritan woman set for us in this story. The story of Jesus and the woman at the well is a well-known one. It's a long story, as you saw from Miss Mabel's reading, with Jesus using a bunch of metaphorical language for food and water to describe salvation and mission, as the woman and later his own disciples misunderstand and think he's talking about actual food and drink. The story appears in artwork, in drama, in music, including the folk song Jesus Met the Woman at the Well, which has been performed by dozens of different singers, from the Fairfield Four to Peter, Paul, and Mary to Bob Dylan. It's a story that's been studied, discussed, and wondered about by many, many people. And it's a story that has parts that tend to get misinterpreted because we bring our own human biases to our reading of this story. It may help to have some context. The story is set in Samaria, a central region of Palestine between Galilee, where Jesus grew up and began his ministry, and Judea, where Jerusalem and Bethlehem were located. In order to get to Galilee from Judea, the most direct route was through Samaria. Samaria was inhabited by people descended from the northern tribes of ancient Israel. Their worship and rituals were different from those of the Jews. In particular, they did not follow the Jewish rules around ritual cleanliness. And because of this, most Jews stayed far away from Samaritans in order to avoid becoming unclean. The name of the city where Jesus stopped at the well, Sychar, probably pronounced Suhar in Hebrew, meant drunken, a pretty clear indication of how the Jews regarded the people who lived there. So Jesus was passing through a region filled with people who were not exactly well-liked by Jews. When he reached Sychar, it was close to noon, and Jesus was exhausted and thirsty. He stopped at the local well and waited there while his disciples went into town to buy some food. John's gospel says specifically that Jesus was tired, a surprising comment on his humanity in a gospel that tends to focus on Jesus as divine. And while Jesus was waiting, a Samaritan woman showed up at the well alone to get water. It probably sounds logical and reasonable that Jesus asked her for a drink of water. He was tired and thirsty, it was hot in the middle of the day, and she was the only person around. But asking her for water was actually a shocking breach of both religious and cultural protocol. Jews did not associate with Samaritans, whom they considered unclean. And a Jewish rabbi could not talk to women directly in public. And it was clear that this woman was also an outcast, even in Sychar. Most women treated collecting water at the well as a social occasion and went in groups. Yet this woman came alone. And midday was an unusual time to be gathering water. Most people came to the well early in the morning when the temperature was cooler and were resting out of the sun at midday. Together, these signs suggest that the woman was a social outcast in her community. It's tempting for us to assume as we read this story that we know why the woman was an outcast. We learned during her conversation with Jesus that the woman has had five husbands and is now living with a man who is not her husband. We assume the story is about the woman being a sinner. We bring our own judgments, our own conceptions of marriage to the story. But most New Testament scholars who have studied the story agree that Jesus was not condemning her or passing judgment on her. In fact, she may have been trapped in the ancient custom of Levite marriage, where if a woman's husband died, his brother was expected to marry her, and was ostracized by the community if he didn't. The woman is presented to us not as a sinner that Jesus saved, but as a witness who met the Messiah and brought others to faith. The encounter with the Samaritan woman was not the only time Jesus met someone whom others considered unworthy, unfit, or unclean, and yet Jesus treated them as fully worthy and fully human. The four Gospels are full of stories of Jesus associating with those whom the Jewish leaders thought were unfit company for a rabbi. He healed a woman who had been bleeding for years. He ate at the home of Zacchaeus, a tax collector who had defrauded people. He healed lepers and blind people and ate regularly with sinners. And in today's story, Jesus not only accepted water from a woman whom society considered an outcast, but broke all kinds of social rules by approaching her and engaging her in conversation. Perhaps there's an important message we should pay attention to in how Jesus treated others. It's not easy. Separating the chosen or the good from the outcasts or sinners is a theme throughout history, a theme that's used to divide people. Millions of Africans were brought to the early United States as slaves. They were treated as less than human and enslaved generation after generation simply because of their race. In Nazi Germany, more than 6 million people were killed in concentration camps because they were not part of the accepted race, religion, or sexual orientation. And ethnic wars are raged around the world from biblical times through today in an effort to separate the right people from the wrong ones. Setting and protecting boundaries that keep out people who are undesirable is a behavior rooted in fear. Fear of otherness, fear of people who don't look or talk or worship like we do, fear of being contaminated, literally or figuratively, and ultimately, fear of sharing our gifts and call and power with the unworthy. And yet we are all, each and every one of us, beloved children made in the image of a loving God, all of us. This takes us back to the movie Shrek. One of the reasons I especially love this movie is because it plays with our expectations about who's accepted and who's an outcast. From the time we meet Fiona, we use our previous experience with fairy tales to see her as the beautiful princess. We learn that she's under a curse that turns her into an ogre at night, and that she must kiss a prince to break the curse. We see Shrek as the outcast who can love her from afar, but will never be considered an appropriate partner or love interest for her. When Fiona falls in love with Shrek and kisses him, we may unconsciously assume that her kiss will turn them both into beautiful humans, because that's what we've learned to expect from fairy tales. And yet it turns out that they both become ogres. The movie challenges us to rethink our ideas of who is beautiful, who is accepted, and who is worthy of love. Many American churches these days proudly display the slogan, "All are welcome here," on their church signs and websites and social media. It's a good sentiment. It's one we should all hope to live up to. And yet I challenge us all, myself included, to stop and ask ourselves whether it's a true statement. Are all really welcome here at Lawrenceville First Christian Church? Would we welcome someone who barely speaks English and can't communicate with us? Would we welcome someone who's struggling with a mental health challenge that leads them to see or hear things nobody else experiences? Would we welcome someone who does not identify strictly as male or female and has a beard and wears a dress and heels? Would we welcome someone who's dirty, smelly, carrying everything they own because they have no stable place to live, and yet they're so hungry for God's grace that they risk coming into a fancy suburban middle-class predominantly white church for worship? And if we did welcome them, what would that welcome look like? Would we invite them to come sit with us during worship? Would we take time to sit and listen to their stories? Would we put in the effort to make sure they kept coming to church, even if we had to go get them? Would we find genuine ways to learn from them? Would we recognize and nurture them as future deacons and elders? We learn how to welcome others as Jesus did through the example of others around us. When I was a little girl, there was a woman named Betty Blake who was a central part of my childhood church. Betty had had cerebral palsy her entire life. She walked with a cane, her speech was slurred, and she was not able to drive a car. And yet she was devoted to her church, and the people of the church embraced her. She had several different people to sit with in worship. My mom and many others helped her fill her plate at church dinners because she didn't have the strength to carry a full plate by herself. And she had an important role in church activities. Betty was the first adult I knew with a severe disability. And the way the church embraced her and treated her as a full member of the community is still a vivid example to me of how to welcome and accept those who are different from us. One of the important lessons we can take from the story of Jesus and the woman at the well is to take an honest look at ourselves. As individuals and as a church that strives to follow the life and teachings of Jesus, we need to stop shaping our lives according to societal definitions of who's worthy and who's not. Like Jesus, we need to be open to those who are different, to genuinely welcome them. We can be a church that crosses boundaries like Jesus did. We can break them down instead of setting them up. And we can expand our definition of us. It can be challenging to welcome those who are different from us, to recognize that they have something valuable to teach us, and to truly take the time to share stories and learn from each other. We have to keep our eyes and our ears and our hearts open to see God's grace in people we don't know. And we have to make time and effort to connect with new people. This story teaches us that the rewards of welcoming are worthwhile, because it turns out that the Samaritan woman is an example of growing faith and witness that all of us can follow. In John's gospel, the story of the Samaritan woman at the well follows immediately after the story of Jesus' encounter with Nicodemus that Joey mentioned in last week's message. Nicodemus was a Pharisee, a Jewish leader, who came to Jesus in secret under cover of darkness and yet left without really understanding who Jesus was. And he had a humble woman from Samaria who was open to having a conversation with a man who asked her for water, was the one who first recognized him as a prophet. And this woman is the first person to whom Jesus revealed himself as the Messiah. The good news came in an unexpected place and time through an unlikely messenger. It was the Samaritan woman, not the Jewish leader Nicodemus, who first heard the truth. And it was this same woman who first had the courage and passion and excitement to go tell others. She left her water jar at the well, ran off to the nearby village to tell others about Jesus, and brought many of them back to meet him themselves. This woman, a social outcast in her own community, whom the Jewish leaders would consider unfit company for a rabbi like Jesus, was the one who brought many others to faith. Those Gentiles of Samaria were some of the first to believe in Jesus as the Messiah. When the Samaritan woman told others about her encounter, she was hesitant and unsure. She didn't just proclaim, "I've met the Messiah." She told the story of her conversation with Jesus and then asked, "He couldn't be the Messiah, could he?" She believed what she heard, but she was still a bit uncertain and hesitant. And yet God used her to share the good news with others, even if she wasn't sure. And this is also an important message for us to hear. She didn't have to be ready enough or knowledgeable enough. God used her just as she was. And the same is true today. God does not wait for us to have perfect faith before using us to share the good news with others. God's grace is surprising and comes to and from unexpected people at unexpected times. Acceptance, welcoming and embracing those who are different. Being a witness to the Messiah's presence, even if you don't feel completely ready. Like Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well, let us expand our welcome and share the good news so that we can build a world where all are truly welcome to come together and celebrate the risen Christ. What will you do this week to help make it so? Amen.